The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hope you're having a great day. It is a beautiful Sunday again, 8 to 9 o'clock. We are here every single Sunday morning, providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. I'm sitting here in the treetop studios of North Shore 104.9, overlooking a fairly empty North Beverly train station right now. Perhaps you're gearing up for things to do today. Man, this is just a great time of year, isn't it? Lots of things to do, lots of activities, busy schedules, graduations, family events, sporting activities, all sorts of stuff going on. Well, I got to tell you, a couple weeks ago, I had my son's bar mitzvah. Corey had his bar mitzvah. It was a great, great weekend. We had a wonderful time, got to see some great family. And, you know, with all the stress that leads up to any family event, whether it's a graduation party, whether it's a bar mitzvah, whether it's a wedding, whether it's a christening, communion, any of these things, everyone plans and they got to get everything just right. You know what? It always works itself out, doesn't it? It's just always great to be hanging around with family, knowing that they are your family. You know, sure, I was reading, I think it was probably on Facebook, and you have to believe everything you read on Facebook, of course. You know, it says, everybody has that crazy aunt, that crazy uncle, that ridiculous person in the family. And if you don't know how to recognize who that person is, then you just may be it. It's possible. So I'm glad that I was able to recognize the crazy aunt and the crazy uncle and the crazy grandparent and the crazy, all that kind of stuff. So, well, no, I'm not a grandparent, but it was easy to find those people. And we had a wonderful time. So great to hang out with the family. You know what's even better is when you see all of the cousins who had grown up together. They were really, really young playing together. But then you go to a bar mitzvah like we went to, and they're all hanging out on the dance floor together. They don't see each other, but maybe once or twice a year, and they all get along. They're sitting on the couch, hanging off to the side, just chatting with each other, exchanging Facebook pictures or Snapchatting with each other, or just getting along. And it's really, really nice that's how these families continue to grow and thrive. And I hope you experience that with your kids, with your families, whether it's at a graduation party, whether it's anything in the next couple weeks. I mean, that's what it's really all about. It has nothing to do with money, folks. It has nothing about how much you spend or how much money you make or how much money you keep or any of that other kind of stuff. Speaking of how much money you make and how much money you keep, I got to tell you a great story. Yeah, you've heard my daughter Mindy on the radio here before. Mindy is 20 years old, just finished up her second year over at Babson College, and she landed a nice internship opportunity over at one of the financial services companies in Boston. Believe it or not, I did have nothing to do with it. She actually found it on her own. She went on her own intern, you know, interviews, all that kind of stuff. And there's 17 kids that are rising juniors that are all part of this internship program. And they're all paying them. She's getting paid $17 an hour. And so she's doing well in that. And she's very excited that she's getting $17 an hour. And she already figured that if she works, you know, 40 hours a week, which she'll be doing, 40 hours a week times the 11-week internship, she's going to make a nice hefty sum of money. She's already figuring out, geez, this will be great, how many thousands of dollars she's going to make for the summer. And then reality struck on Monday when she had her first day at the internship. You see, the internship's in Boston. And in order to get to Boston, you have to get to Boston. And so she could drive and pay a ridiculous parking fee as a 20-year-old kid, or she could just no problem. I'm going to take the commuter rail. Well, we live up in the North Andover area. So she's taking the commuter rail, heading into Boston. Then she has to switch over in North Station to go to the Green Line to get to the Prudential Center. And she's all excited. You know, hey, this is what working in Boston's all about. Working in Boston for the summer, it's going to be great, all that kind of stuff. And then she calls to tell me, she says, Daddy, do you know how much money it costs to get like a week-long or a month-long pass on the T? And she's horrified at how expensive it is. I said, Mindy, I said, there's something to learn from this. I said, just because you were making $17 an hour and you were all excited to brag to your friends as to how much money you were going to make per hour, you neglected to consider the costs that are associated with making that kind of a wage. If you were making $12 or $13 at a local place near home, you might end up with the same, if not more, take-home pay. And that's all because of your choices that you make. Now, granted, the opportunity that she has presented to her to work for this company has tremendous upside, tremendous opportunity, potentially a full-time job out of college. But you need your kids to realize, and she needs to realize, that just, I always say, it's not how much you make that matters. It's what you keep that matters. You really need to think about that. When your kids are all starting to take on their first job and they're deciding, well, this company only offered me $40,000 and my friends got $48,000. Or this one offered me $26,000, but my friends got $32,000, so that job must not be any good. You got to think about all the other stuff. If you've been working, you understand that. But I will tell you, when I go in and sit down for reviews with my staff, or anybody sits down for reviews with staff about total compensation and packages for the year, all most people care about is how much did you pay me? They don't care about what the employer paid in benefits for you. They don't care about what the employer paid for health insurance costs or Social Security expense or Medicare costs or any of the other costs that are associated, whether it's the cost of a 401k match, the cost of any of these things, life insurance, dental insurance, disability insurance, all of those other benefits that you generally have as a benefit, as a service, as a perk to you, that oftentimes employees discount because they're not hitting the salary number that they thought was the salary number to get. Now, perhaps over time, we begin to appreciate that a little bit more. But certainly in our youngest of ages, we don't. All we think about is what is the hourly wage. You know, one of the things that I've tried so hard to do, and if you are an educator and you're listening to this show, or you maybe a school administrator, I want to let you know how much I want to come into your schools and teach your kids some basic personal financial literacy skills. This town of North Andover allows me to do it each year. I would love to do it in your schools, no cost whatsoever. No, I'm not going to be selling to your kids or anything like that, I promise. That's what Peabody High School thought I was going to do. When I went to Peabody High School, I offered up to do, and I'm a graduate of Peabody High School, I offered to do personal finance classes, go into the classroom and help give some kids some basic personal financial literacy instruction, and I was turned down for two reasons. Number one is they thought, oh, you're probably going to come in there and you're going to give them all sorts of literature so that they can give it to their parents so that they can potentially do business with you. No, that was not my intent at all. Frankly, I hadn't even considered that until they even brought it up. But that's not what I do. And then the second reason is they said, well, some of the financial literacy concepts that you might bring up might make some of the children feel inferior. You know, some of the kids might not have these benefits. They might not have the opportunity to have such good paying jobs, or they may not have, you know, they may be working in different environments. They may be part of different programs. And I said to them, I said, wait a second. We all need to fill our tank with gas. We all need to buy food. We all need to write checks. We all need to insure ourselves. Why can't we talk about that stuff? That's personal financial responsibility, isn't it? Isn't that what it's all about? Well, they didn't quite get it. And there was the third reason, of course, too. They said, well, if you now come in and start raising these questions, now kids are going to be curious. God forbid they become curious. And they may start asking their teacher questions after you've left, and the teachers aren't skilled or trained on how to answer those questions. I thought those were the three most ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous reasons for why I shouldn't go into a school. So thank you, Peabody High School. I really appreciate that. And yes, I'm giving you a shout out for that because I'm a graduate of that school. I'm a graduate of that high school, and I'm just really disappointed that that was the case. And at any rate, I would love to come into your school because I'd love to really help out these kids. I know it's towards the end of the year. Let's think about it for next year. Let's get us in the curriculum. I would love to show you some syllabus that I'll put together for you. We were talking about this because it was an interesting situation. Last week, I talked about my experience. Actually, the past couple of weeks, I've talked about my experience over at CarMax and the car that I purchased for my son, Jerry. Apparently, there was a listener to the show who shared some stories, and we kind of shared that a little bit further. on the show, but just this past week, I ran into a family who was deciding on financing a car. And the conversation got so insanely ridiculous that I want to share that story with you about how some people are thinking about paying for vehicles in what makes good financial sense and what doesn't make good financial sense. But I'm going to save that one. I'm going to have you hang on. We're going to talk about that in the next segment, because this one will take a little bit of time. This one's about trying to decide whether you pay cash for a car, whether you finance for a car, what kind of car you should get. There are some silly decisions and silly reasons that people do things. Here's another one. This one I'll talk about a little bit. We had someone in the office that is carrying a $100,000 equity loan on their home. And they have $90,000 in personal investments and $500,000 in IRAs. And they are trying to decide whether they should pay off the equity loan as best they can using the money that they have saved in the account so that they don't have to make a monthly payment every month. Well, that's one of those decisions that you run into where you say, does it make sense to keep the mortgage or not? Do you keep, I'll keep the home equity line or not? The interest rate on this home equity line is very low. It's 2%, 2% interest rate. They're getting a tax deduction for the home equity loan. And if they pay off the loan, they'll have no money left in the bank. All that they'll have is IRA money. Does it make sense to pay off the loan? Well, some would argue, I just don't want to pay that monthly check every month. I hate writing that check. That's just terrible, and we shouldn't pay interest for anything. Yet, what will you do if you need $10,000? What you'll need to do is you'll need to dip into your retirement account, and that could cost you money, because when you take money out of your retirement account, you need to pay tax on the money. Folks, taking money from your accounts to support your lifestyle, to support whether it's home equity payments, the purchase of a car, the purchase of a new computer, a big screen TV, a vacation, whatever it is, trying to figure out where best to take money from your account is the big question. It's the big question, not whether you should buy large cap growth funds or small cap value funds. That's not the difficult one. It's where do you take money when you need it most, especially in retirement. That's what good financial planning is going to do. It's going to start with understanding your cash flow, understanding everything that you have, everything that you own, understanding the taxable nature of everything that exists so that you can have money in the smartest possible way while being prudent with everything else that you own. That's what we try to do, is we try to provide that kind of intelligent advice here on the radio. It's what I do in my office every day. People don't realize that 65% of the clients that visit my office that we have as clients are retired. Someone asked me last week, they said, Mark, how many of your clients have a net worth in excess of $10 million? Because they figured, oh, Mark's got this radio show. Mark's been around for a while. Family's been doing financial planning for almost 50 years. How many of your clients have a total net worth in excess of $10 million? Do you know what the answer is? The answer is one. And we have 450 households that we serve. How many have over $5 million in investable assets with the office? Maybe 15. Folks, the clients that we serve, the people that are listening to this radio show, the people that need the most advice from a financial planner, are people that have a net worth between $500,000 and $2.5 million. That's where the sweet spot is for my office. That's where the sweet spot is for people that really need to maximize the best they can get out of their retirement. And we're going to continue to provide that kind of advice to you on this radio station each and every Sunday morning. And I got a lot more to tell you, a lot more stories to share. I'm going to tell you about this foolish, foolish conversation that I had with someone about how they want to buy a car when we get back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. This is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
If I had a $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, and we are sitting here in the treetop studios of North Shore 104.9's palatial offices. This is a beautiful studio. Well, it's beautiful compared to what the first studio looked like. If you had ever seen the first studio, it was like sitting in your closet. It really was. But no, this is nice now. I mean, ever since Dana Hersey's here. So, you know, you should see what they've done for Dana Hersey now that he's running the show here in the mornings with Muggs, of course. Actually, Muggs runs the show. Dana just sits in his little perch and gets all the attention. And rightfully so. I mean, he's earned it. He's been around doing this thing for a long time. Anyways, we are here to provide financial advice in a language you can understand. And we do it, like I said, each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. I want to tell you a little bit about a little story that goes along with this idea of purchasing a car. You know, there's a lot of kids that are going to be graduating college this year. A lot of people that are in college, they're graduating high school. And I was in this conversation with this guy he's going to be a sophomore in college, and he has been driving around a clunker of a car for the past couple of years, which I think I did too when I got my first car. I think my first car was a 1970 Oldsmobile Delta 88. It probably was the size of Gillette Stadium. It was just enormous and probably got 6 miles to the gallon. I think that's how that car worked, but you know, fine. So he's driving this clunker of a car, but he's been working and he's been saving up his money to buy another car. And he was hoping to spend around $2,500 on another clunker-type car, but something a little bit better. $2,500 for a used car. And he's been looking around. He's found a few different cars around, and he finally found something that he thought, all right, this will be fine. And then while he's out searching, he figured, well, maybe I'll go over and visit a couple dealerships and check things out a little bit. And he goes to this used car lot, and he sees this car, and it's like screaming to him. And it's worth $16,000. And he's looking at it. He's thinking, oh, this could be great. This could be a car. $16,000. Salesman talks to him a little bit. And he says, what could you afford for a monthly payment? He says, I got a part-time job right now. He says, I can afford about $200 a month. No problem. We can get you into this car. He says, you can get me into this car for $200 a month? Yeah, not a problem. You may recall last week on this show, I talked about some of the major red flags that suggest that you are heading to financial ruin. One of those red flags was to finance a car for 5 to 6 years or more. So when he told me about this offer, and he says, Mark, I'm really seriously thinking about this. This will be great. I said, what happened to purchasing a $2,500 car? What happened to doing that? He says, well, I'm probably going to have to trade the thing in after a couple of years anyways because it'll probably die off. Okay. I said, well, what made you think about this one? He says, it's $200 a month. He says, I get my part-time job. I make about $400 a month doing my part-time work while I'm at college. $200, I take half of that, pay it towards the car every month. This will be great. I said, wait a second, how long are you going to pay this thing for? I don't know, just a few years, 4 or 5 years? I said, have you figured out how many years? Just do the math. $200 times 12 is, you can do the math, $200 times 12 is $2,400 a month. $2,400 a year, right? Multiply that times 4. And let's just round it up for fun to $2,500. After 4 years, you now are at $10,000. How much was the car you were looking to buy? $16,000. Oh, we haven't figured in tax. We haven't figured in registration costs. We haven't figured in insurance. We'll just stick with the 16 for now. Oh, we haven't figured on interest rates either. So 4 years is at $10,000, okay? To get to $16,000, we've got to go to at least 6.5 years, and that's without interest, without taxes, without anything. He says, yeah, or he says, maybe that's a lot. He says, but my dad said he would help me out. I said, what do you mean your dad said he'd help you out? He says, he could help me out with an extra $50 a month. Okay. So now you're going to make it a 6-year payment. And I said, and how are you getting the financing? Oh, well, my dad has to co-sign for this too. Because what if this kid doesn't have any, he doesn't have any credit yet. He's never held any credit whatsoever. 6 years for it. And he says, yeah, but he says, but the interest rate's really good. It's going to be a great deal. I said, 6 to 7 years to pay for the car. I said, I want you to think about this. You're going to college. When you graduate college in 3 more years, do you plan on having a job? Oh, of course I'm going to have a job. I said, when you get the job and you're going to your first day of work, can you imagine yourself still driving that car? Well, yeah, maybe. I said, no, that's not a good answer. The answer has to be absolutely without any without any uncertainty. I'm absolutely going to do it. Oh, okay. Well, I'll say absolutely. I said, okay. And then you're going to get your first promotion a year into work. First bonus. And you might say, ah, now's the time. But remember, you still have a couple more years still left to pay off on the car. He says, yeah, well, I'll just trade it in and upgrade it for another car. I said, what do you think this car is going to be worth? Do you think your car is going to be worth what's left of your payment plan? No way. Folks, you are absolutely foolish if you can't afford the financing arrangement on a car of 4 years or less. You have no business financing a car. You say, well, what if it's all that I can afford? Well, then you know what? Then you have to afford something lesser. That's life. Things will get better. Things can change, but you have to accept things the way they are today so that you're not developing financial ruin for the future. And he still didn't get it. He said, but wait a second, Mark. If I take the $2,500 out of my bank and buy this used car, then I'm not going to have any money in the bank. I said, yes, but you did say you're working and making $400 every month, doing some part-time work, right? He says, yeah. And I said, and you were willing to take, of that $400, $200 of it and putting it towards a car payment, right? I said, well, if you did that, if you put $200 a month away for 12 months, like you were going to make as a payment, in 1 year, you'll replace the money that you just pulled out to pay for the car. Yeah, but I got to wait a year for that. And what if other expenses come up? And when you start thinking like that, you have no business financing. You got to stop doing that stuff. You got to live within your means. And we are seeing this happen all too often, especially with the children of adults. And you know what ends up happening? Two things happen. First of all, if the parent co-signed on the loan, guess who's responsible for the outstanding payment on the loan? You'll say your kids are, but at the end of the day, you know you're going to get stuck with that. And secondarily, if they start buying stuff that they can't afford, where do they turn to for money? Where do they turn to? They turn to you, don't they? And what if you're in retirement? And what if you have to change your retirement lifestyle so that you can help support the kids for their financial mistakes? Are you okay with that? Do you blame yourself for it? Like I said, you know what I think? It starts at the school. I mean, quantum physics is nice, I guess, to learn. And AP history and AP Euro, whatever it is, or come on, how to balance a checkbook. How to handle yourself in a car crash. I was driving with my son Jerry last week. We were driving to Connecticut. And we were talking about, Jerry's on his permit. We were talking about the things that he had learned in his auto school class. And I was asking him about it because I've asked the same questions of my two previous kids, Mindy and Alana. And I was asking Jerry, I said, Jerry, I said, what do you do if you get into an accident? Call you? That was his response. Call me. Wouldn't you think that would be something that they would teach you to do? That they would teach you to do in auto driving school? Jerry, what do you do if you get pulled over for drunk driving? Oh, I know exactly what to do for that, Dad. Because they teach them that at driving school. They teach them what to do and how to respond to a police officer if ever you get pulled over for drunk driving. But they never teach the kid what to do if they get into an accident. What is likely to happen in the first 6 months of their driving experience? Get pulled over for drunk driving or get into an accident? I think we know the answer to that question. Actually, remember, drinking is illegal at 16. You're not even legal until 21. So if you get pulled over for drinking and you're underage, I think that's even a bigger issue. I think that's even a bigger issue. But it amazes me how lax our state, our community, our country has become in our unwillingness to provide financial literacy education to children in the classroom. In fact, it's been brought up 24 times at the state level here in Massachusetts, and it's never actually been taken to a vote. It's never been taken to a vote because we're all worried, all too worried, that we might upset somebody. And that just is absolutely insane. All right, enough with some of the stupid things that we do financially. Let's talk about some good stuff. A lot of graduations coming up. Graduations from college, graduations from high school. A lot of newborns. It's springtime. Mother's Day. Lots of fun stuff that happens. But oftentimes people are wondering, what do I get kids as a graduation gift? What do I get for financial gifts for young kids? What can I do other than just provide them with a check? Lots of things you can consider. You know, the typical thing is, all right, well, what kind of a check do I get? And the last thing you want to do is go over to Target and buy something off the rack, knowing full well they're going to return it. And I tease my dad about this, but my dad ends up loving to go to these stores to buy things that he thinks my kids are going to like because he saw it on the internet. And he doesn't realize that my kids have long since aged out of many of those gifts. But what can we do to make it special? As a parent, as a grandparent, what can you do for your kids, for your grandkids, to make gifts special that have some financial education around them? I want to share some of those ideas with you. I posted in a blog this past week in my newsletter, and I'm going to share it with you this week. I'm going to share it with you actually after we get back from this break. But if you'd like to get my free newsletter, it does come out every Friday at 10:30. It's called Planning Pointers. What you need to do is go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Go to the bottom of the website. Click on the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, and you will start getting that free weekly newsletter. And of course, if you'd like to get some financial advice in a language that you can understand that's designed just for you, I'd love to invite you into my office for a free initial consultation. All you need to do is call my office, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Give my office a call. We'll get you into the office. We're seeing so many people who are listening to the radio. I don't know what it is about the months of April and May. We've been getting lots of calls from folks, a lot of good calls too. And so I'm happy to help you out. We've learned a lot, and I'm going to teach you some items, some financial advice in a language you can understand when we get back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. What's your 4.0?
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. I got a funny story to share with you. I was telling you that I'm going to share some ideas for financial gifts for kids. Well, I get this letter, a woman that listens to the show. She knows that I'm Jewish. She's clearly Jewish as well. And she writes this letter to me in like this old lady Jewish Yiddishkeit kind of thing. So here, let me read the letter to you. She says, I have a beautiful granddaughter who will be bat mitzvah next month. I'd show you her picture, but I can't figure out how to send it through my flip phone. She is such a Shana Punim. That means a cute face. That's a Yiddish word for Shana Punim. Rather than hand her a check, I was trying to think of a unique gift for her bat mitzvah. Any idea? And she signs it, Cavelling, in Boxford, Massachusetts. So I thought, well, let me see if I can answer this. I said, you know, well, many grandparents elect to give traditional cash gifts that are generally in a multiple of 18. When you go to a bat mitzvah, everyone's asking, bat mitzvahs, bar mitzvahs, what do you give for a gift? Generally, if you want to give cash or a check, you do it in multiples of 18. Why 18? 18 stands for chai, and chai means to life or good luck or best wishes, and people do it in multiples of 18. So, but if, you know, I'm seeing that more and more people are also giving some meaningful gifts. So I want to give you some ideas on gifts for kids that are young, kids that are in their teens, kids that are graduating, whatever you might want to do. So here's some ideas. Number one is, of course, the 529 plane. This was established, I want to say, 10 or 15 years ago or so. It was an opportunity for you to be able to put money aside on a tax-free basis for the benefit of a child or grandchild. The beauty of it was, is that you would have complete and total control of the money. You could take it away at any time if you wanted. And if the child chose not to go to college, you could give the money to another kid. Pretty sweet deal. What happens is you would have to find a company that offered a 529 plan, and each state sponsors a 529 plan. In the state of Massachusetts, it's sponsored by Fidelity. So people might run to Fidelity and say, hey, I want to set up my 529 plan at Fidelity. And you can. You could also, though, go to any other state you like. You see, as a Massachusetts resident, there is no financial benefit to you for selecting the Fidelity plan over any other state's plan. The reason I tell you that is because if you are a resident of New York and you want to set up a 529 plan, there is an incentive to use the New York 529 plan, which is run by TIA CREF, because you get a tax deduction when you place money in the 529 plan. So you have to be careful. If you're in a certain state, there may be tax benefits to you for using your in-state plan. New Hampshire doesn't have any benefits one way or the other. Massachusetts doesn't have any benefits one way or the other. Well, what a 529 plan allows you to do is you pick from a collection of mutual funds or package products that might be available through the distributor, and you invest the money. You put it on your social security number, and then you list your child or grandchild as what's called the beneficiary. So their social security number is also on that application. What that means is that you have full and complete control of that account. If you want to close the account, you can. If you close the account and take the money back, there may be tax and penalty. But if you keep that money in an account for the benefit of the child, if they want to use it for college, you can then say, well, you were listed as the beneficiary on this account. I'm going to use this check, have it sent to whatever college they're going to, and the money goes to the university or college tax-free. No tax to pay. You take the money out tax-free. Now, what does that cover? Does it cover just tuition? Actually, it covers all school-related costs. So tuition, room and board, computers, anything that has to do with your kid's college education, as long as the money is going towards an accredited university or college, you're going to be able to use this. So it's a great program. It goes aside for free. Yeah, I mean, the money grows for free. But here's what happens. What happens if your child or grandchild says, I've decided I don't want to go to college? Well, there's two things that can happen. You can say, well, all right, you want to do something else? Here's the money. You can cash it out and give it to them. But you are going to pay taxes on the growth and perhaps a penalty as well. Or you could transfer that money very, very easily to another beneficiary of which you're still the owner. Let's say you have two kids and your oldest chooses not to go to college, but the younger one still has the potential. It's just a matter of paperwork. No other people use the switching of beneficiaries on 529 plans as a means of sheltering assets from potential financial aid applications. I would encourage you to talk with a college specialist on the best way to do that. I like to go by the rules and follow the, you know, go by the books and follow the rules. I think some of that stuff is overstated and overdone sometimes, but you got to figure out what you want to do there. What's interesting, though, is in a 529 plan, you can't use that money for high school. You can't use it for private high school, for private elementary school, but you could use it if you wanted to go to bartending school. Isn't that funny? You could actually use it for bartending school. If you wanted to, I don't know, you could be any type of professional career. You could use that. But you can't use it for high school. Can't use it for elementary school. However, there's a secondary account called a UGMA or a UTMA account, Uniform Gifts to Minors Act or a Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. This is what the traditional savings account was for children years ago. You know, grandma gives you $100 and you got to set up an account for Johnny. And Johnny's not of age, so you have to set up an account because he's a minor. And so you go to the local bank and they set up what's called a custodian account, a custodial account. The Uniform Gift to Minors Act is usually UGMA or UGTMA or UTMA. What happens there is you serve as the custodian, but the money is placed on Johnny's social security number. You can use that money for Johnny's benefit for anything that falls under the category of health, maintenance, and support. So if Johnny wanted a computer, Johnny needed a bicycle. I don't know, Sally wanted to go to some computer course somewhere. You could pull money out of that account and pay for it, as long as it was for his or her benefit. Can't be for your benefit. In fact, there were days back in the 60s and 70s. Remember the Hare Krishnas? The Hare Krishnas taught kids to raid the attics of their parents' homes to find the tax returns. Because, you see, when there's interest earned on custodian accounts, they have to be reported. And the rules were a little bit different back then. There was a portion that was tax-free, a portion that was taxed at the kids' rate, and then a portion that was taxed at your rate. And frankly, back in the 70s and 80s, when interest rates were pretty high, it was pretty easy to see that stuff disclosed on a tax return. And if kids saw those numbers on there, they could back into trying to figure out how much money was in the UGMA accounts. And here's what the problem was. If you've got money in a custodial account and your child is now of majority age, 21 years old here in Massachusetts, they can simply cash it in and take the money. And that's what they were encouraging kids to do. It was 18 in many of the states where they were encouraging these kids to go find the UGMA accounts, walk into a bank with their driver's license and cash in the accounts and take it. Well, that is still available today. So if you hold UGMA accounts, UTMA accounts, custodian accounts for your children, understand that when they reach the age of majority, 21 here in Massachusetts, if they walk into my office and they have a custodian account here and they show me their driver's license, I, by law, have to give it to them and not call you. That's the law. Now, most people figure I can live with that. I'm fine with that. Others say if they ever tried to do that, that's the last nickel they'll ever see. You know, we've heard that too. But UGMA accounts and UTMA accounts are a great way to start putting money aside for your kids as well. It can work. And maybe you give it to them. Give it to them at 21. That's okay. Here's a couple other financial gifts and ideas. This is not something that I generally encourage people to do a lot of, but if you want to try to teach your kids a little bit about investing, you could buy them a share of stock. There's a company that is called giveashare.com, G-I-V-E-A-S-H-A-R-E, giveashare.com. What you're able to do there is buy a share of Disney, a share of Apple, a share of Pepsi. And what happens is they set up, you send money to this company, and they will send you a replica stock certificate. So it looks like a real stock certificate. They'll have it framed for you, but they'll also buy a share of stock in a brokerage account for you so that the kid can follow a stock if they want. Now, it's a cute thing to do. Some people like to do it. I'm not necessarily a fan of it because a lot of the mutual fund companies now, if you wanted to make a $500 investment, let's say, for instance, they'll let you open up a mutual fund. And they'll give you an education and a card and all sorts of instructions to teach your kids about mutual funds. If you don't want to spend $500, yeah, you could buy a share of stock. No, I don't even know what Microsoft or PepsiCo or Disney or any of those things are selling at, but I would venture to guess they're all well under $500 a piece. So depending upon what you want to spend, that's fine. But here's the big one. Here's the new one that I see that's happening. If you want to really step into the digital age and really give your children, your grandkids, a gift of value, a gift of memory, a gift that will be everlasting, it's to give them the gift of a video. What do I mean by a gift of a video? Look, all the kids today, they're Snapchatting, they're YouTubing, they're Instagramming. Imagine what would happen if you could sit in front of your laptop and turned on the camera that's built into your laptop or on your computer, or you held up your cell phone to your face and you sent a few wishes, a few stories to that kid. Maybe you're telling them, you may answer the question, you know, when I was your age, this is what life was like. Or, I'm so proud of what you've accomplished. These are my dreams for you. This is what I think about when I'm at home, when I'm thinking about laying in bed and thinking about my kids and my grandkids. These are my dreams. These are my wishes for you. Or one of the greatest lessons in life that I learned was this. Or tell them a story about when something happened that you thought would be the end of the world and how you learned from it. Those are great stories. I'll tell you, they may not appreciate them at the moment, but when you're gone or when they're looking for some support and they're sitting in an apartment all by themselves after getting their first job, wondering, oh my God, can I continue to afford to live here? And they look at those videos, they're going to appreciate the value of family, the value of what you gave them and perhaps where they came from. It is so easy to build these videos these days. If you want to figure out how to do it and don't want to have to bother the kids or the grandkids, walk into the Apple store. Walk into the Microsoft store. They'll show you for free. They'll even help you do it right there and then. It's a great gift. And frankly, it's the gift of the future. Think about how many times you flip on your computer these days and you're not even reading things anymore. You're watching videos. Wouldn't it be cool if grandma could present a video to their grandkid with their wishes for them, with their graduation thoughts? You don't need to have money for this, folks. You don't need to write a check for this. Look, everybody has a cell phone. Even flip phones do little video pics. The choice is yours. But when it comes time to thinking about gifts for your kids and your grandkids, I want you to think a little bit differently. Think a little bit differently. Make it a legacy. Make it something worthwhile. When we get back, we're going to talk about a few more ideas. Got a lot of other thoughts to share with you today. We've got to take a break. I want to remind you, though, if you would like to come in and visit with us to do some financial planning, to do some investment planning, to begin to prepare and consolidate and get your financial house in order so that you can fulfill and live your retirement life to its fullest, I'd love to meet with you. I'm meeting with so many people that are listening to this radio show. Give my office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Leave a message. Jody will get back to you. We'll schedule a free initial consultation for you. All right, we'll be right back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Don't have enough time to go to the gym? Grab your phone and download Bench Bro, the hottest finger-tapping fitness app.
With Bench Bro, you'll test your reflexes, your concentration, and your finger-tapping skills as Bench Bro helps you achieve your virtual dream physique.
This is a fitness resolution you can finally keep. Download our free app, Bench Bro, today.
Bench Bro.
Available on the App Store
and Google Play.
No membership required.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I am here in studio for from 8 to 9 a.m. each and every Sunday morning. You're probably getting tired of hearing me. If you listen to the Red Sox on Saturday nights, you know that I'm going to be here Sunday morning to greet you and say hello. Here I am with some financial advice in a language that you can understand. And how about those Red Sox, huh? Who would have ever thought the Red Sox would be leading the American League in runs, in doubles, in hits, in on-base percentage? The powerful Red Sox. Oh, and the big one? In steals. Look, when I was growing up in I was born in 66, but I remember the Red Sox of the 70s and 80s. If the Red Sox stole twice in the season, it was a lot. They were the slowest team on the field, for sure. They might have had power. They might have had good pitching. But you never counted on the Red Sox for being a base-stealing team. But they're doing it. I mean, I think it's great that they're doing it. It's a lot of fun. And you never know. I mean, granted, it's way early in the season. But, hey, it's fun while it lasts. And you know what? It takes our minds off Deflategate. It takes our minds off from the Boston Celtics, who were eliminated all too early, but frankly deserved to be eliminated that early. The Bruins, did they even play this season? Are they still? I'm bad. I mean, I don't follow hockey at all. I'm sorry. They still play, right? Yeah. And then there's this soccer team, the New England Revolution, are they any good? I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry. There are certain sports I follow and certain sports I don't. You all understand that. You know what's really weird? I can't get my wife, Laura, to go with me to a Red Sox game. Can you believe that? I get Red Sox tickets periodically. I get Patriots tickets and I Celtics tickets. I go, Laura, let's go to the game. I'm just not into that. I got to figure out a way to get Laura to go to the game. I get to take all the kids, take other people to the game. She never wants to go to the game. I got to figure out a way to try to get her in. Somehow figure out a way to make that happen. Anyways, we're here providing financial advice in a language you can understand, and we do it each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. We've talked about a lot of things today. Today we talked about some really stupid financial mistakes that I'm seeing people make out there. One is, paying 6 or 7 or 8 years for a car. That is absolutely insane. And listening to people try to justify their rationale for why they're doing it. The other thing, though, we talked about was some great gift ideas that you can consider for your children and grandchildren. Financial gift ideas or gifts of substance. I'm not talking about buying the next slip and slide. I'm talking about some great financial gifts for them, some great thoughtful gifts. And here's one more gift that I wanted to share with you that I'm seeing grandparents do more and more of this year. It's called the gift of the experience. Imagine what it would be like if you could take one grandchild away for the weekend. Not all the grandkids, not all the kids, one grandchild. If you, and maybe you and your spouse, you and your partner, could take one grandchild away for the weekend, what would you do? How special would that moment be? The deal would be no cell phones for the weekend. And if you want to do the no cell phone thing, the easiest way so that they don't get ticked off, take them on a cruise. Take them to an island where Wi-Fi isn't all that accessible. They may be a little uncomfortable with it at first, but man, will you get a great experience. What if you want to do something local? What if you wanted to just spend the day at the beach with one grandkid? Take the kid to Canobie Lake Park. Take the kid up to Gloucester. Go into New York City for a weekend and go see a show and dinner. The gifts of experience have become so valuable and so everlasting to both the grandparents and the grandchildren that I hear these stories all the time. Yes, now some of them get bigger. Sometimes grandparents who are approaching, they're in their late 70s or early 80s, they say, it would be great, absolutely great, if we could take the entire family, kids and grandkids, away. So I'll tell you a little story about two clients, husband and wife. They came into our offices well over 10 or 12 years ago, so we've been working with them for a while. And it was clear that they were going to have enough money to support themselves through retirement. And they were going to have money to pass on to the next generation. Not significant. I mean, it's just some money to pass on to the next generation. But one of them said, you know, my dream has always been to be able to take the entire family to Disney World. The entire family. I said, well, how many people are in the entire family? She says, well, we got three kids. They're married. So that's six. And then I have 11 grandchildren. So 6 plus 11 is 17 plus the two of us makes 19. And she says, but I wish I could do it, but I know I can't afford it. And I knew right there and there that she could afford it. The problem is she just didn't know how to do it. That was really the issue. It's like thinking about moving into a retirement community. You know you need to do it, but the thought of packing is just, you just say, forget it. I'm just going to wait. And so I said, let's not wait. Let's do this. Let's make this happen. And so part of our work as a financial planner, when I'm trying to help people fulfill their goals and objectives and achieve the dreams that they want, we take it to the next level. What I did is I went to the travel agent. I also did some work on the internet. It was travel agents were a little bit more prevalent back then than they are today. And I tried to price out what it would cost to go to Disney World. And she wanted to go, I think it was in December that she was looking to do, which was expensive, an expensive time to do it. She wanted to do it a little early. The kids were young, so the kids could get out of school. So it was like the first and second week of December, which is actually a pretty good time to go to Disney World. Problem is, she says, how am I going to get the kids to coordinate all their schedules? So we made this plan for 2 years in advance. 2 years. So we told the kids, Mom is planning a vacation for the entire family. Everything is paid for. Airfare, hotel, food, park tickets. Everything is paid for. You are responsible for making sure that you coordinate time off. And with that much notice, all the kids could do it. So how much do you think that entire trip cost her? Now, granted, this was 12 years ago. 19 people going on this trip for 1 week. How much did the whole thing cost? Well, you can make it as much as you want or as little as you want because a lot of it is predicated on the hotel that you stay at. The whole cost was $32,000. And you might think, that's not so bad. Others might say, I could never afford that. Well, she was surprised to see that it was $32,000. Now, granted, if she had decided to go over Christmas, it would have been twice that. It would have been twice that. But the kids, you know, the kids have their one or two rooms and it all worked out. They bought the meal plan. They bought the tickets, and it is an experience that they talk about for days and days and days, for years and years and years, because what they said was the best thing in the world was we all went down together. We all let everybody do their own thing at the park. The only deal was dinner time, everyone is together. And Disney is well equipped to accommodate a party of 19 if you plan it well enough in advance, and everybody had to sit for dinner together. And today, the stories that they share, now that these kids are older, 10 years older, they still reminisce about the stories. The parents just celebrate and the smiles and the memories and everything that have come from that. Folks, it isn't about picking the right investment to achieve your financial success. It's about making memories, making lasting memories. Our lives on this planet are short. Our children will have differing memories of each one of us. Our parents, our friends, our coworkers. How will you make the most of it? How will you celebrate your life but not impoverish yourself for the rest of it? There's a balance, and you can achieve it if you do it smart. My partner, Marion Gilman, always tells me, Mark, it amazes me. People don't know what they don't know. And too many people come into our office with these preconceived notions about how stuff works, about what their tax rate is going to be, how much taxes they're going to owe when they take money out of their IRA, what the challenges will be from moving from one account to another, how to move from one accountant to another, changing financial advisors, consolidating their financial life, moving from their home to another place, of whether it's into a retirement community, to a smaller place down in Florida, buying a place in Florida, renting a place in Florida, changing your automobile. All of those come with a lot of beliefs and understandings that frankly are misinterpreted simply because you haven't been there. One of the things that we take great pride in after 50 years of doing this in my business is I can truly say we've been there and we've done that. And even today, I'll admit there's still stuff that we learn. Every single day, there's stuff that we learn. In my office, there are 1 death a month, 12 a year. Now, that's not because we serve bad coffee. It's just that Dad started the business in 1968. People get old, they die. But I will tell you, and perhaps we'll do this on an upcoming show, is addressing the myths and misconceptions of what happens when you die. No, I don't know what happens to you when you die and what happens when you go wherever you go, but I do know that there is terrible misconceptions in what people think will happen. What people think will happen when you die. For instance, I had this call. I had this call just 2 days ago, actually. A client of ours calls and he says to me, Mark, he says, I've been thinking that when we die, I want to be sure that my three grandchildren each get $50,000 over and above what my kids get. I want my kids to get money, but I want to be sure outright my three grandkids get $50,000. And he says, so I've worked with my attorney and I've had it written in my will to say that my three, that the grandkids will get $50,000 each. And I said to him, Ron, that's not going to work. He said, what do you mean it's not going to work? I said, because when you die, and when your spouse dies, your largest assets are three things. You have IRAs. When you die, the IRA goes to the beneficiary that is listed, which are your three children after your wife. You then also have a house and a brokerage account, which are owned in a trust. The trust says that when you die, the money goes to your wife, and then after your wife, to the three kids. Besides those three accounts, what else do you have? He says, well, I've got about $10,000 in the checking account. I said, and how is that owned? He says, it's in Judy's and my name. I said, okay. So upon the second death, upon Judy's death, assuming nothing else gets changed, that $10,000 will be subject to probate. You'll pay costs on that and an attorney to have that $10,000 account probated. Maybe there's $7,000 left, which will then take it to the will. And the will will say, well, I want $50,000 to go to each of my three grandchildren. And there isn't going to be any $50,000. There'll be $7,000 to split evenly amongst the three grandkids. Folks, there's a lot of stuff to be learned, a lot of changes that you need to make, a lot of better understanding about your life, your estate, your plans. And we're going to continue to talk about this each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on North Shore 104.9, but I got to get out of here. I'm up against the clock. Got to make room for Aurelia Nelson to get in here with her curtain up show, telling you some great stuff that goes on and around the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and there's plenty of that stuff coming up. So hang on for Aurelia Nelson. She'll be right here, and I got to get out of here. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.